have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey everybody, Jason here with the after show with the amazing Jim Parker. Jim, how are you doing after our main episode? I wouldn't say marathon. I mean, I know you and I both have done much longer conversations on podcasts, but it was great. How are you feeling about everything?
I'm feeling great. I had so much. I had so much fun, and I know I'm a chatterbox, but I had a great time. I hope I didn't put anybody to sleep.
No, I thought it was great. It's funny because I know you well enough to know that you know, once you get on a roll, you'll talk. Same thing with me. It was a good back and forth. There was a lot of stuff shared, and I found it really valuable. I thought there was a lot in there to help people, you know, like we talked about in that main conversation. For anyone tuning in, this is the after show. I learned this from a podcast friend years ago. He's like, you know, do an after show afterwards, because usually there's some other content that'll come up once the lights are off and the cameras are off and the real conversation happens, even though the lights are still on and the camera's still on. But you know, this is, you make sure to check out the first episode, the first conversation. It's definitely worth it, whether you're a business owner, business broker, maybe even a buyer. There's so many things we covered. There's things we didn't cover. Like we might have to do a third episode at some point. And if you don't know who Jim Parker is for some crazy reason, you can Google or go to Jim Parker Business Broker. You could Google him. You could find that. The link will be in the show notes. All of his bio will be in here. So let's dive into this. This is a little bit different, Jim, than my normal after show, because we went so much into depth in the first one that I loved that I'm moving some stuff to the second part that I don't normally do. So let's start with the marketing tips. So this is usually the rapid fire business broker growth, the things that you have found over the years that business brokers do successfully to help grow their pipeline. So what kind of things come to mind? You know, 3 to 5 different tips that you can think of that really help fill that pipeline for a broker.
I think number one out of everything, the most important thing is building a referral network, Jason. That's the most important thing. You know, if you take a seasoned business broker who's been doing this for 5 or 10 years, probably 70% of their business is coming from referrals. You know, and I know that sounds silly, but it's about, you know, when you do sell a business, you know, do it, handling the buyer and the seller correctly and them being happy at the end of the day, so that when the buyer years down the road wants to sell the business again, you know, they're thinking about you. They're like, wow, I had that great experience with that broker. I want to use the same broker. You know, the seller, they, you know, business owners know other business owners, you know, and they sell their business. You know, the next couple of years, other business owners might be like, hey, how did you sell your business? Da, da, da. And they pass your name on. Referrals, I think, is just key. And that goes from, you know, CPAs that you're working with in a transaction. Attorneys you're working with in the transaction. When you're doing a transaction, just think almost everybody you're coming in contact with is somebody that could be a referral source. And that's the best lead you could possibly have, is because when somebody calls you up and says, I heard about you through John and he told me to give you a call, he's already sold you on that. Like I know from like my advertising, when I talk to somebody that's calling me for my advertising, it's a completely different conversation than it is when somebody's referring me, because they're already sold on me. Now we're just getting to the nuts and bolts, Jason. So number one, it's a referral source all the way.
Okay.
You know, I gotta tell you, and I don't mean this as a I just gotta say this. I'm not just saying this because it's your podcast, Jason. A couple months ago, you emailed me out of the blue. I had no idea who you are. I, like every business broker out there, or probably every business person out there, you get inundated every day with emails.
Yep.
I usually don't even open up emails for people I don't know who they are, let alone read them, let alone take action on them. And I don't know. I have no idea why I opened up your email. I have no idea why it prompted me after I read your email to go to your website. I'm already doing a lot more activity than I would have ever done. I'm reading you over your website. I'm like, oh my God, this guy gets me. I immediately called you and I said, I don't know if I'm that interested in doing your podcast. I'm interested in hiring you. And what me and you talked for like, I don't know, an hour or so, that first phone call. And I know you kept trying to get off the phone. I just kept picking your brain. But I was just completely amazed, Jason, because I was like, this guy, like, he thinks the way I think about marketing and advertising, except for he knows how to execute it. I don't know how to execute it. I just I love your philosophy. I love the way you're doing things. And so the guys, those of you out there listening, I have two verticals. I specialize in selling auto repair businesses across the country. And I specialize in selling lawn and landscape businesses across the country. I hired Jason to do one of those two verticals. And then within probably, what, 3 or 4 weeks, I turned around and hired you to do the other vertical, right? Yep. I've just been completely amazed by what you do and how you do it. And that leads to my second point right underneath referrals, is building credibility out there. And, you know, that whether it's social media posts or, you know, whatever, building the credibility out there, I think is really important. Even if you're referred to somebody or any advertising that they're doing, they're going to go out and check you out. They're going to Google your name. They're going to go to your Facebook page. They're going to go to LinkedIn. Like they want to check you out, and you can get work through and deals through those deals, but it's also the credibility that you're doing.
Yeah.
Right.
So. Yeah. And I appreciate all of that and what you said and us working together and that, you know, sharing it. And it's so true, right? Because even if you think of the referrals, like in this day and age, somebody is going to Google you or do their background, whether it's before the first call or after the first call, because the first call, like, this is great, but let me just make sure so that there's no doubt. So don't assume anything's just going to pass without any search. And I think one of the worst things that I see is where there's just nothing. Right. Most brokers, they don't have bad stuff. They just have nothing. It's just missing. And so then you have to leave it up to that prospective business owner to decide, like, do I trust this person because I met with them and I talked to them, but there's nothing. They have no digital footprint. Is that enough? Maybe for some baby boomers right now, they'll take that because they're old school handshake, look somebody in the eye. But, you know, long term, that's not going to work. So, you know, that's what I appreciate about you is you realize that blend of like the referrals, the team, and then, you know, making sure that the credibility is there to back it up so that there's no doubt, you know, the number one ranked Jim Parker out there is you, right?
You know, Jason, you do so much. I mean, you're getting me on podcasts with other people's podcasts. You know, you're helping me launch my two podcasts for both my verticals. Yep. You're sending out email campaigns to my database. You know, you're posting my social media, my LinkedIn, my Facebook, and you're not just posting, like, you understand our industry. And I think that's the critical thing, is you understand our industry. You know what types of things should be posted, not posted. Like, I don't know, you kind of like doing everything. Like, you're doing a lot. So I really appreciate, I'm like super, super excited about you.
Well, we're excited to be helping you as well. So
the third thing is I'm doing Facebook advertising right now. And I'm getting a lot of great results from that. That seems to be really, really working. But I don't know, like, you know, I'm friends with a lot of business brokers on Facebook. And, you know, when I go through my feed, I see a lot of ads for selling your business for business brokers, things like that. I don't know if the field is too crowded with so much Facebook advertising to business owners from business brokers, it's been an oversaturated market. But I can tell you, for me, I have seen a really good response from it. And it's been a lot better than I thought it would be. But I think a lot of that might come down to, too, is that I specialize. Like, I test, like you, Jason, I gave them just the lawn boss. I'm about to hire them to do my auto repair boss. They're delayed by you a little bit. I had more faith in you right out of the gate than I did them. But I'm about to hire them to handle my auto repair boss vertical as well. You know, and getting all those leads, I think that I'm wondering if I'm getting more leads than the average business broker because I'm specializing in an industry. And so instead of just saying, hey, you want to sell your business? I'm saying, hey, do you want to sell your lawn and landscape business? I specialize in selling lawn and landscape businesses. Maybe my ad is more appealing because it's more industry specific. You know what I'm saying? But I have found Facebook advertising to be really good. But, you know, at the end of the day, and I'm playing around with a few different things right now. I've got a telemarketer that's calling for me. Telemarketers can be a hit or miss. You got to make sure you hire a really, really good telemarketer. I wouldn't hire a company. I'd hire an individual, and I subcontract that person out and I pay them per lead. But I'm doing a bunch of different things. But I think business brokers, when it comes to marketing and advertising, everybody's looking for that magic bullet, that one thing that they can do that is going to get all these leads for them. And you can't look at it that way. You need to hit these people over and over again, multiple different ways. And so, like, I look at it as, like, I've got a database of, 7,000 lawn and landscape business owners that are doing a million plus in gross sales. And it's about hitting those people, physical mail, email, Facebook, LinkedIn, phone calls. Like, I want business owners, when I ask them, how do you hear about me? Trade shows, go to trade shows. That's a big one too. And when you go to trade shows, you want to talk to the vendors, not just people. Sellers aren't going to come up to your booth, by the way, at trade shows. They don't want all their counterpart friends to know they're thinking about selling their business. You're hoping they're taking your picture of your booth from a distance, or you're hoping they're remembering your name and they're entering in their phone down the road, after they walk by. But, and you're forcing people to take your cards, as they walk by, here, take my card. So most people throw them away, but you want that one guy to be like, yeah, I didn't want to pick it up on my own. But it's talking to the vendors, I think, is really important, building the relationships with the other sponsors there. But I think conferences are big too. But the whole thing is, when I ask a business owner, how did you hear about me? I want them to be like, I don't know. I hear about you everywhere.
Everywhere.
And it's not like you're advertising everywhere. It's just that you're advertising to that same clients over and over again, multiple directions. And that's another thing is I talk to business brokers and they're like, yeah, no, I did an email. I did a postcard campaign and I didn't get any results. And I asked them about it and they're like, yeah, I sent out 2,000 postcards over a 3-month period of time. It takes 8 to 12 months for marketing and advertising to kick in. It takes 20 to 25 touches before they even remember who you are. I think the hardest business brokers tend to just like, I'm going to do this. They don't get immediate results. They pivot. Get immediate results. They don't pivot. Now, you do have to track your marketing and advertising. You got to keep it up long enough to work, but you also don't want to be wasting money. But, I think brokers are too quick to throw money and pull it back. What do you think, Jason?
I think it's true. I think it's one of those things where you have to understand that it takes multiple attempts, multiple interactions and exposure, and that everybody is different, meaning that everybody is going to respond to a different thing, right? One person may get a postcard and go, this is amazing. Another person may have somebody who filters through their mail and they'll never see that postcard, or they vowed to never call on postcards because one time they called on a postcard and they totally got burned, or it was a terrible experience. And so they don't trust postcards or Facebook ads or anything, right? And so you never know what's going to hit. And so you've got to do all of it. It's when I hear you talking about this now, and then I think of the first episode we did, the main segment, and then I think of like our conversations to date, is that, taking that money from your commission successes, putting it in the marketing bucket and investing, and then you've just got to test lots of different things. Like I deal with a lot of marketing people, like marketing experts in companies, and it's like you can't do attribution anymore. Like, what was it? Was it the TV ad? Was it the website? Like, you never know, because you only know the last thing that got to you. And so the challenge is you just got to do all of it as a test, right? In some kind of experimental budget and tracking, and then see if it moves the needle. If it does, maybe try more of these tests, but you don't know. Again, could have been a postcard. They heard you on a podcast. They downloaded your ebook, and then they finally saw a webinar, or their attorney said, hey, by the way, I got a guy. It's like, oh yeah, I've been following that person, right? Like, you don't know what the thing will be. So you kind of got to do as much of it as possible, which again, going back to you, also building a team or having resources to do it, because you're also busy in transactions. And so you've got to have those, parts that are happening and constant. Before a seller ever speaks to you, they look you up. They scan your name, they search your LinkedIn, they read your last few posts. And in about 60 seconds, they decide whether you feel like a trusted advisor or just another broker. Most brokers never see that moment, but it happens every day. That's why we built the Digital Impact Assessment. It's a structured evaluation of how your online presence actually shows up in four ways: authority, positioning, visibility, and engagement. And if you want to know what sellers are seeing before they book a call with you, just remember you can't improve what you don't measure. All right, now back to this amazing conversation.
The thing is, I think business brokers, we tend to be cheap. We do. We tend to be cheap on our education, which I think is crazy. Like, the more educated you are, I mean, the reason people hire is because of our knowledge. So if you invest in yourself, the more educated you become, the more valuable you become. But we're also cheap when it comes to marketing and advertising. Like, if you look at the typical, what they typically tell you to spend, and maybe you know better than me, because I learned this 35 years ago in college. But I was taught 35 years ago in college that you should spend between 5 to 10% of your annual revenue in marketing and advertising. And so 5% would be if you are maintaining where you are right now in the marketplace, 10% or maybe even higher if you're being aggressive and you want to grow in your marketing and advertising. But I think a lot of brokers, they might spend a couple $1,000s a year and that's it. Yeah. And then it doesn't work. And then like, it doesn't work. And then next year they try something else for a couple $1,000s and that doesn't work. You know, it's doing it constantly and consistently. And again, like we said in that first episode, the more money you spend on marketing and advertising, the leads grow exponentially. I mean, I'm sure at some point you're hitting a point where you're not getting the return, but you know.
Yeah, it
I'm
should.
I'm going to keep you on the phone for another hour, so I'm going to just shut up.
No, it should keep growing. And that's what's fascinating, right? Like, I see some brokers that I talk to where they're like, you know, their marketing budget includes associations, they're like trade associations they're a part of, maybe networking events, other things that they do, maybe an ad in, you know, a trade journal, and then maybe like the postcard campaign you're talking about. And then that's it for the whole year. And then they're banking on the referrals, the relationships, and the happenstance that occurs. And they're hoping that's going to sustain the business. And I think, you know, there's a side of you that, you know, says that brokers are cheap. I think it's possible that the cheap side is coming from the initial years in brokerage where it's survival and there's no business. And then that one deal that you were banking on dies. And you now don't have that money. And it's like, you don't know when the next paycheck is. And so some people are living in that scarcity kind of like survival mode versus like we were saying, is like when you hit it, when you get that deal that it closes, take that money, set it aside, have it in the investments, buy the equipment for the farm so you can keep, you know, scaling it up easier and easier.
Real quick, what is the percentage you should be they recommend spending on marketing and advertising right now?
I don't know specific. It's tough to say because every industry is different. I know industries where, you know, they want to keep their sales and marketing at 25%, like if it's more retail. I know some that are, you know, 20-25% marketing because, you know, it's more of the marketing is driving. So it's a marketing driven business, not a sales driven business. I think it's the time and the money because, you know, I had somebody on the podcast early on and they was like, you should be spending 25% of your time every week on marketing related activities, which to me also includes podcasts, right? Like to me, this is a marketing related activity mm-hmm. for both you and I, but like this falls under that bucket of time. And then there's the money. And, you know, I think it also depends on where you are in the development. If you're in the early years, if you're not at a point where you're happy with your volume, and at a very high referral rate to sustain that, then you need to invest and plant more seeds because you can't sit back and just harvest the apples that are coming off the tree. Like you need to do some more stuff short term until you get to that referral machine mode.
You know, going back to I was talking about that 5 to 10% after listening to you, I wanted to clarify what I meant. Look, to me, you should spend, if you're in growth mode, you should spend at least 10%. Not of what you currently are doing. You should be spending 10% of what your goal is, where you want to be. So I just wanted to say that. So if you're out there listening to this, if you're making $150,000 a year, but you want to make $300,000, I wouldn't say, take $15,000 of your currently making the 10%, spend it. I would say spend $30,000, spend 10% of where you want to be. And I'm in the next year, and I'm not saying your end goal 5 years from now.
Yeah. And I think that's the tough one, right? Because again, that goes into reinvesting in yourself as a business, not just a solo person that's you know, trading at some level, trading hours for dollars, right? Because I found that when I was consulting before, it was fundamentally just hours for dollars. And business brokers, a lot of them are hours for dollars because they're trying to do it all and not reinvesting. Like you said, even in the education part, which is super important. So let's talk about the next part, because I think that's amazing. That should give people a lot of stuff to focus on for marketing. Let's talk about the next one, which is the deal that got away. So this is usually the lessons of the lost deal, nearly 25 years, hundreds and hundreds, countless transactions you've seen go through, and then the countless, I can't imagine how many not happen or go through or close or even start. Anything jump out as far as like a cautionary tale, deal that got away? Maybe it's more recent where it's like, should have happened, but it didn't.
Yeah. You know, I had a deal a couple years ago that, it was really unfortunate. We were, we had an offer on a business, and, we were working, we were probably working on the deal for about 2 months. The seller had refinanced the building with an SBA loan. And I can't remember all the particular details about this, but because of that, I shouldn't have brought that up as an example, Jason, because I can't remember the details. And that's why I can't remember any of this stuff. It's not because nothing bad has ever happened to me. It's because my memory is so shot. And like the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, most of my deals have closed. You know, I'm going to tell you what the couple deals that I have, I haven't closed in the last few years. This is a common occurrence.
Okay.
And this is what I'm really stressing to sellers now is that this, and this happened to me a couple times in the last probably 5 years, is that they mentally checked out. Like we list their business for sale, and it takes me 2 to 3 weeks to get my business to the market. So it takes a while, but they mentally check out as soon as we engage with each other. And then, you know, we're 2 months into the deal, you know, we got buyers circling it and we're having buyers seller phone calls, and then I get their updated financials and their numbers have taken a dive. Because they're already thinking about retirement. And I'm like, so now, you know, now I go, we were talking in our last podcast about going back and making sure that doesn't happen. That's one of the things I tell sellers when we list, like, I need you to concentrate on your business. Keep your head in the game. Do not pull back at this point. The business is not sold. Keep the foot on the pedal. Da, 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 da. That's probably the biggest thing that I've seen. Like, and it's only happened maybe 2 or 3 times in 5 years, but 2 or 3 times, a lot of times.
Yeah. And I think the key is, right, because, and it's not so much that it just keeps happening. This goes back to what we talked about in the first episode with, like, when there's an issue or there's a problem or something happens unexpected, unwanted, go back, figure out the source, solve it, right? Don't just put a Band-Aid over that gunshot wound. Like, let's figure out, like, what keeps causing this and, like, you know, get to the source, not just the symptoms from the outside. And so, like, then what I hear you say is like this owner checkout, which I hear from many brokers as like the thing that they're experiencing or worried about, is what you've done with you and your team is like really set the expectation with the buyers, both selecting or the sellers, selecting the business owners who understand their job is to just keep on keeping on. And then also like making sure throughout that you don't even let them start down that path of envisioning themselves on a beach somewhere and then they've just given up. And then now, you know, their business is worth less. It's coming towards closing. The updated financials come out. And then the buyer's not happy because it's no longer what they thought they were buying, right?
This is not so much deal killers, but I love to talk about my pain point for 2025. It wasn't a deal killer, but my gosh, it was a big pain point for me and my team last year. I don't know what happened last year, but it seemed like so many buyers were using SBA lenders that they found on their own. You know, we recommend, we have recommendation list of SBA lenders that we like working with that are really good. We know they're good. BDO is good. The bank's good. The closing department's good. Like, we recommend these people. And I wonder if it's their buyers are going to the other SBA lenders because maybe they're getting a quarter of a point less on their interest. I don't know what, I don't know, but we, for some reason in 2025, we had more buyers than usual that were bringing in their own SBA lender that we ended up having problems with. And let me give you an example of one of them. One of them was that we had a business under contract and the buyer was working with this lender. And we were going into the closing department. I mean, we were like, what, 9, 10 weeks into the transaction, and the closing department said our bank cannot do this deal because the seller had a loan with us a couple years ago and they had some delinquent payments with us. And so the buyer called up the, that was an email that came across. Buyer calls up the lender of the BDO, you know, the person that he originally started working with. And the BDO goes, I knew about that. He goes, I was hoping the closing department wouldn't find it.
See it.
He knew about it a week after we engaged with him, or after the buyer engaged with him. And he sat on that information for 2 months, like a simple phone call to the closing department. Hey, I found this. But the problem with that BDO, he was probably desperate. Probably he's not a, not a seasoned BDO, desperate to make for a deal. And instead of taking the 5 minutes out, calling, finding out it's not going to work, he was hoping and praying that they weren't going to see it. And those are the kind of little things. And then you have to go out and find it. And this happened to us on three transactions where we had to go back out and find a new banker. Not the same scenario, but we had three lenders last year where they got kicked out. We had to go back to another lender. And it wasn't the because of the business. It was the lender. It wasn't fitting the criteria of the lender, you know? And that's so 2026, that's the hole we're really pushing this year, is we're really going to try to explain to buyers this year, got to use, we can't force them, but we're going to really try to convince them to use a list of five lenders that we provide them and explain to them why.
It makes sense, right? And it's just unfortunate to think like, it wasn't a seller problem. It wasn't even a buyer problem. It was just specifically the bank problem that caused those issues because of something in that. And, you know, it's tough. You already have enough things. You know, I had someone on the show, they said deals are going to make their own problems, right? They're going to generate problems. And so you just have to be ready for it. It's kind of the job in managing all of it and, you know, handling all of that. Like it sucks when I can imagine that pops up and it's no fault of the parties involved. And, you know, just got to wonder, and this is probably a third conversation, the third podcast that we should probably do, but you know, where the buyers and listening to gurus, or, you know, you're dealing with more sophisticated buyers, you know, playing a different level, but you know, where the buyers coming in and their expectations, where that makes challenges, you know, for you and the sellers as well, you know, as part of this, and you can't control everything. So you kind of have to, you know, vet the best you can and select the best buyer. Right.
Yep. I don't know. I just think for the business burgers out there, you know, like if you want to be an A+ practice, to me, it's like you're the listings you have to work towards getting listings that are A+. You got to find buyers that are A+. You got to work with A+ SBA lenders. You got to work with A+ attorneys. You got everybody you work with has got to be A+ marketing people. Like I work with you, Jason, like everybody you work with has got to be an A+. Your employees you hire, they got to be A+, you know? And that's the key thing. And I think sometimes people build relationships with people and they stay with them too long. And maybe that person's a B, or maybe that person was an A+, but you know, they ended up being a B, or their team lets you down. It's not so much them. Like, I don't know. You want to be A+. You got to surround yourself with A+ people.
I love it. I think that's a great place to stop.
Yeah.
I think it's a great, great after show. It was really good stuff. I think culmination of the first conversation and this one ongoing. I hope people get a lot of value. I hope people took a lot of notes. Jim, once again, appreciate you being here, your time, your expertise, sharing all of this. For people tuning in, links will be in the show notes to find Jim. You know, if you look up Jim Parker Boss Group, you will find everything and anything on him and all the stuff that he mentioned. He's working on the podcasts, his book that will be coming out at some point early this year on the auto repair side. He's got all the other content, the videos, a lot of stuff out there. So make sure to follow that and engage with him on that. And once again, Jim, I appreciate you, you being on here and just being, you know, a great professional in the field.
Thank you for having me on, Jason. That was fun.
Yeah. And for everyone tuning in, make sure to check out the first episode. If for some reason you found this episode, that's awesome. Make sure to go back and check out the first conversation with Jim. You might look at it and go, that's a little bit long. I promise it's all valuable. Like, it's great stuff. you know, anyone that knows me knows that I don't buy into the attention span myth. So, you know, if it's valuable, you're going to listen to it. You're going to get a lot from it. I recommend that. It's great stuff. We'll have the link for that as well. And as I say, until next time, stop hoping for growth and start growing your pipeline.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show, hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.